The Holy Gospel according to John, the 17th chapter. Jesus prayed, I ask not only on behalf of these, but also on behalf of those who will believe in me through their word, that they may all be one. As you, Father, are in me and I am in you, may they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. The glory that you have given me, I have given them, so that they may be one as we are one. I in them and you in me, that they may become completely one, so that the world may know that you have sent me and have loved them even as you have loved me. Father, I desire that those also whom you have given me may be with me where I am, to see my glory, which you have given me because you loved me before the foundation of the world. Righteous Father, the world does not know you, but I know you, and these know that you have sent me. I made your name known to them, and I will make it known, so that the love with which you have loved me may be in them, and I in them. The Gospel of the Lord. Well, I want to start out by talking to the graduates for just a moment, and you're all over the place, so me trying to find everybody's eyes. In the days ahead, as you're coming to this high school graduation point, people will want to assign that title to you. You'll be assigned that title of high school graduate. And it's a big accomplishment. It's something you've been working on for most of your life, and something that you will carry with you forever. But what I want to say about that is we always need to be careful about not letting a title define who we are forever. Now, the rest of you, we all know that we're identified in many different ways. Some of us may be identified by the jobs that we do, the things we've had. Sometimes we get defined by the mistakes we've made, which isn't always very fun to have happen. But we get defined in lots and lots of different ways. One of the things for me as a pastor, and I think the funniest story I have to tell, and I probably have told it before, but I was at the dentist's office one time, and the dentist is in my mouth doing all this stuff, and he's going on and on about, oh, the church this, and the church that, and blah, 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 and he stops, and he goes, oh, so what do you do for a living? It was the best moment ever. Because then he spent the rest of the time, hands in my mouth, trying to backpedal everything that he had said. And his assistant just about fell off her chair because she thought it was the funniest thing ever. But we get defined in so many different ways by the world around us. And we have two stories, one story that has these two parts this morning, and there's two different definitions of who the people are. First, we hear about a slave girl who has this spirit of divination. So she kind of has... She's a slave girl, but she's got this extra power that makes her special to the people that are her owners. And so she spends many days following Paul and Silas around and proclaiming that these guys are from the Most High God. And they proclaim a way of salvation. And it seems that after several days, Paul gets tired of this girl following them around, proclaiming this message. Now, the best way I can equate this is all of you that have children, you know sometimes when the children just keep following you around and keep going at you, asking for this, asking for that, until you finally give in. Or, what I do in my house is they get to ask once, if they ask me twice, it's no, and if they keep asking me, it'll be no for a long time. Because that's just how it needs to be. Then they only ask me once, and I don't have to hear it over and over and over again. At least when it works. Sometimes it doesn't work. But this girl is following them around, and she keeps proclaiming this truth about who they are, the Spirit proclaiming who this truth is. And so finally, Paul gets tired of it, and he turns around, and he sends that Spirit away. And that's kind of the last we hear about this slave girl. We really don't know what happens next. We don't know. We know that the people who owned her are mad because they just lost some revenue. But we don't know exactly what happens to this girl. And there's something to it for me that I worry about all the time because if all we can define this child as is a slave girl, then we aren't giving her the fullness of who she really is. We aren't giving her an explanation of who she really is. And so then we move on, and we hear that because they're mad, because the owners of this slave girl are mad, they turn Paul and Silas into the authorities and get them thrown into jail, where they're chained and put away. Well, we hear that during the night they're singing hymns, they're praying, and the other prisoners hear them singing, hear them praying, and at some point in the middle of the night, God brings an earthquake, and the chains are broken, they're set free. Could the first hymn have been any, first song been any better? The chains are broken, they're set free. But they don't do what every movie says they should do. They didn't hightail it out of the prison. Instead, they stayed right where they were, and when the jailer awakes, he thinks, God, they're gone, I'm in trouble. I'd rather not face the Romans about this, I'd rather face my own sword. And so he prepares to kill himself with his own sword. And that's when Paul hollers out, don't worry, we're all still here. We're all still here. So these prisoners decide not to change who they are and to escape from the prison. Instead, they stay where they are. And this jailer, we don't hear a name for him. We just know he's the jailer. But what we see is a transformation in his own life, that he goes from being the jailer to the one who cares and comforts Paul and Silas with the wounds that they've been given from the flogging that they received before they went into prison. And then they begin this conversation, this dialogue back and forth about what it means, who Jesus is, and what it means to follow him, and what it means to have life and salvation and all of those things. And in the end, we find out that the jailer and his entire family are baptized. And so once again, he goes from being this jailer to now being this child of God in this family of God. And what I think I want all of us to hear is that we can get lots of titles, we can get lots of definitions, descriptions put on who we are as people. And when we get those descriptions, depending on where we are in our life, depending on where we can accept things, what we hear, what we understand, we can take those and just kind of let them go aside, or we carry them with us as a burden for a long time. I think back to when I was in high school, and probably the worst thing that a coach ever said to me, and I've probably said this before, but I'll say it again because I like to repeat myself. But a coach during halftime of a basketball game looked right at me in front of the entire team, and he said, "You are the biggest disappointment in school history." And I still carry that with me because I get emotional when I say it. But those words haven't defined all the things I've done since. Now, they still stick with me, they still mean something, they still hurt to hear them said, but they don't define who I am. And I think that's important for all of us, because there are times in our life when we can get lost. There are times now, you're graduating from high school, and now you're making this next step into something new, into adulthood, finding a job, going to college, whatever those things be, new definitions of who you are. But some days you might have a hard time wondering, who am I in the midst of this? Where do I find my identity now? I knew where my identity was before. Where do I find my identity now? And adults often feel this when they retire from a job, because they knew who they were in that job, but then they retire and they're not quite sure anymore, who am I? Who am I now that I'm retired? Or sometimes, too, we see this from women who've raised children their whole life, and the children move out of the home, and then they go, well, now who am I? Because my identity has been here in these children. And so the world likes to define a lot about who we are. The world likes to define who we are in relationship to everyone else around us. But there's something way more important in this story, and there's something way more important for each one of us to hear, and that's the definition of whose we are. that one of the things that we have in the waters of baptism, as Paul and Silas baptized the jailer and his whole family, is that they're no longer just people in the world, they're now children of God. They're now part of this kingdom, part of this family, part of all of what makes us who we are. And so no matter what kind of labels the world wants to put on us, we have to always hold tight to this truth of whose we are, that we are God's beloved children. And because we're God's beloved children marked with the cross of Christ forever, there's nothing that can take that away from us. And I think that's important for all of us to hear, because we have those moments where we're not sure who we are. We're not sure what we're doing. We're not sure if we're on the right path. We're not sure if we're following the way we should be. But we're reminded of whose we are, that we are children of God, beloved children of God. I think what's important about this is that sometimes those titles can then keep us bound. Those titles of who we are can keep us bound. And it's kind of one of the things, the way we talk about language, we talk about that slave girl, and wouldn't it be better to say a child of God who is in slavery? That the slave doesn't define who she is, that this child of God defines who she is. This person, this human, whoever it might be, defines who they are. And I think we do that a lot with our language, is that we can bind people with the language we use to describe who they are. And so we describe people in a way that makes them less human, less of the children of God that they are. And so there's a quote that I've seen this week, and it's been kind of sitting with me, and I think this is so important for us as God's community gathered together to remember. The story doesn't end once freedom is realized. Rather, community is needed to help those of us, all of us, who find ourselves formerly enslaved, perhaps newly free, to move into the fullness of what God intends. The story doesn't end once freedom is realized. Rather, community is needed to help those of us, all of us, who find ourselves formerly enslaved, perhaps newly free, to move into the fullness of what God intends. And I think that's so important as we try to understand who we are as God's people, as we try to understand who we are as God's people together, that we name those places where we feel like we are in bondage. We name those places where we feel like we aren't free to be who we are meant to be, who God has called us to be. And we rely on the community to help and build us up and support us, to give us the identity, to help us see our identity that we have in Christ Jesus. And so I think those words are so important, because all of us, as God's people, are looking to move into the fullness of what God intends for us. And I think about another song we've been singing for a few weeks now, maybe a couple months, but the refrain says, "Who the Son sets free is free indeed. I'm a child of God, yes I am." And I think those words are so important, because they remind us, and they're those words that we should say into a mirror, they're words that we should say to one another. There are words that need to be repeated over and over again. I'm a child of God. You're a child of God. That's the identity that matters. All of these other labels don't mean so much. But who we are as God's people, as God's children, that's the title that matters. Amen.